And we will go on to case number 401-4242, the United States of America versus Tadros.
Good morning.
It pleases the court, counsel for the government. Judge Anthony Montemuro for Mr. Tadros, appellate counsel, not trial counsel. Judge, this, or Your Honors, the brief in this particular case revolves around two issues. After a reading of the transcripts in this cause and the arguments, counsel, rulings by the court, there seems to be a problem with regard to the government, at least in my mind, to the government having a violation of the requirements of Brady versus Maryland. What happened in this particular cause is that a few days before the trial was to be engaged, the government became aware of certain tape recordings that were done by the Prudential Life Insurance Company. Which,
let me pause. Yes, how do those tape recordings help you?
Well, I'll tell you how they helped me. Subsequently, I'm locked into the four corners of the record in this case. Subsequently, it has been found out, or might I say, I'll proffer that subsequently it could have been found out, that those tape recordings involve the recordation of a party other than the defendant who had the conversations with those particular insurance companies in an attempt to garner whatever funds or whatever reward that might be made from that insurance company, including
what
perhaps
you're saying
changing
is
the name of the beneficiary in those powers.
What you're saying is the voice on the machine on the event is not your client?
That is the subject of another pleading in before the trial court at this particular point.
But the record does not show anything that would indicate these things would help your client.
The record in this particular case does not indicate that. However,
that's what we're stuck with, is the record.
Well, we are, unless we look back.
Brady refers to matters that would be a benefit to the defendant.
That's correct.
And the record does not show that there's anything that would benefit the defendant.
Well, doesn't the government have a duty to make
not that? Under Brady. Brady, they have a duty to disclose to you information available to them, which is assist you in your defense.
That's correct. That's
all it says.
I understand that, but isn't that the facts of this particular case? At least that it's
well, that's why I started with the premise. How does it help your client? What would you do with this recording to help your client? You said nothing in the record demonstrates that at all.
Well, it doesn't demonstrate in the record that there was a different person who was on the tape recordings. But it certainly doesn't say that the government isn't required under Brady or some other rule, especially Brady, to have at least reviewed that evidence, and if it was favorable to my client, to make it available to him.
Why didn't your client seek to obtain these tape recordings on his own? He knew they existed.
Government gave you notice.
The government gave notice to the defendant's counsel at the time,
right,
that these particular tape recordings existed or could have existed. In fact, as I read the transcript, two or three of those particular transcriptions were tendered or made available, and there were 20 that were not.
Right, but all your client's counsel had to do was issue a subpoena.
Well,
and I understand, you know, trial was looming ahead. But all that had to be done with the subpoena issued, the district court advised of it. I mean, the defendant has some burden. You were given notice, and these tapes were not in the control of the government. The government didn't own this company. They were not in the control of the government.
But
if they had been tapes in the control of the government or some government agency, then
they were witnesses of the government, and in essence, were under control of the government.
Being a witness doesn't equate to being in control of the government.
Well, Your Honor, there's
not. Do you have a case that says that?
No, I don't have a case that says that, and I have no way of knowing what was in the mind of trial counsel as far as his procedure in the cause, and I'm not here to say was right or wrong that I would have done something else.
Well, and I understand that, and I'm not trying to say you made the judgments, but the fact of the matter is all counsel had to do was issue a subpoena. All the government had to do was give defense counsel notice. Notice was given. Counsel could have requested the tape, could have subpoenaed the tape. If there was resistance from the company, that could have been brought before the district court on a motion to compel.
Well, I would I personally feel that they could, that the government has required to do more, but if Your Honor feels that that's what it is, that's what it is.
The government has no duty to conduct the defendant's discovery for him.
Well, I understand that. But if the government becomes aware of, even a week before the trial, of information that could possibly be beneficial to the defendant, aren't they required at least to listen to those particular tape recordings? Get them brought in, go before the district court judge and say, look, we need some more time
here. Exactly what they did, excuse me,
yes, ma'am,
which was to notify you. Well, it wasn't you, but to notify counsel.
That's correct.
And you haven't found any cases that lead to a contrary conclusion. Our understanding is, have you?
Well, all I've found is the cases that are cited in my brief that indicate that the government is under some duty, at least, to inform defense counsel and to make this a trial rather than something that, would come out to an ending that we want it to come out to, a fair and just trial, rather than to do it by way of not providing all of the evidence to defense counsel so you can adequately prepare a defense in the claim. I understand your position, and if I may move on.
Thank you.
There was a motion that was made with regard to the counts in the indictment to dismiss those counts based on the fact that there was not a that there was a statute of limitations problem in that the indictments were brought after the defendant, if in fact there was a intent to defraud. That was, the jury did find that there was an intent to defraud, but the final payment in that case, the benefit that was garnered by the defendant in any type of a fraudulent conspiracy or ill will on his behalf was in May 6th of 1994. There was a recovery that was made from an insurance company. Subsequent to that particular point, since May of 1994, there was no benefit that was gained by my client with regard to some issue of defrauding the insurance company. The insurance company had the man examined by several doctors, four included, who found that the man had an actual damage to his body. And some had even recommended that the man have surgery, which he did not have. But the allegations in the complaint, in the indictment, indicate that the majority of these functions that of fraud occurred sometime from February 5th of 1997 to September 1st of 1999. There was no fraud proven that happened during that particular time. There was no conspiracy count to show that he intended to defraud this company with the actions or the overt actions of he and someone else. And there were no payments that were ever made.
I think the problem is that he continued to apply for the insurance policies, through the mail, long past the May 6, 1994 date, and submitted, those forms to Prudential in 1997.
I understand it. I still don't think that based on the evidence that was presented in the case and review of the transcripts of the cause, that the government proved that there was the elements of fraud that they had to prove to show that this man was guilty of intentionally attempting to defraud the insurance companies of any monies at that particular point. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those questions at this particular point.
You're into rebuttal, so...
Thank you.
Yes, save some time. Mr. Wilson, thank you. Mr. Montemoro.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Eric Wilson on behalf of the United States.
Good morning.
The indictment charged in this case, Your Honors, and the defendant was convicted of one fraud scheme to defraud several different insurance companies. And the common lie running throughout the scheme was that the defendant falsely represented himself to be disabled and unable to work. And addressing the defendant's second argument first, with regard to the mutual trust insurance company, the defendant had a disability insurance policy through that company. Made a false claim under that policy in that he falsely claimed to be disabled. Mutual Trust paid out on that claim in May of 1994. The defendant says that's when the fraud scheme stopped. What the defendant ignores, as Your Honor pointed out, is that there are other companies involved in the scheme, namely New York Life and Prudential. After the mutual trust policy is paid and that policy is gone, in fact, the very next day, the defendant applies for another disability insurance policy with New York Life. He files a claim under that policy, again, falsely claiming to be disabled, tries to get more money. That claim is eventually denied. Counts 3 and 4 of the indictment are mailing by the defendant to New York Life in furtherance of that claim, each within the 5-year statute of limitations. Prudential was a life insurance policy. It was a policy that accrued cash value over time and that the insured could take loans against the accumulated cash value of that policy. There was a provision in the policy that allowed a waiver of the premiums on the policy if the insured could establish he or she was disabled. So that's where the fraud comes in with respect to Prudential. The defendant applied for and received a waiver of his premiums on that life insurance policy by falsely representing that he was disabled. Prudential grants the premium waiver, and then defendant takes out loans against the accumulated cash value of that policy, loans which were never repaid. So the defendant had to periodically submit forms to Prudential, reassuring Prudential that, yes, I am in fact still disabled, to keep this premium waiver going. And counts 1, 6, 7, and 9 are those mailings, clearly in furtherance of his fraud scheme, each of them well within the 5-year statute of limitations. Counts 5, 8, 10, and 11 are the loan checks the Prudential mails back to the defendant based on its accumulated cash value, each again clearly in furtherance and each mailed well within the statute of limitations. So when counsel for defendant suggests that the defendant accrued no benefit after May of 1994, he's clearly mistaken. He received those loan payments from Prudential. Of course, loss and reliance aren't elements of a fraud scheme, but the defendant did, in fact, receive proceeds from his scheme that are actually charged as counts in the indictment. So the defendant's argument completely ignores this fraud against two of the companies involved, New York Life and Prudential, and for that reason, his deficiency of the evidence argument is plainly without merit. With regard to the Brady violation, Your Honor, the government did not suppress evidence. The defendant was on notice of this evidence before the trial started. The defendant could have obtained the evidence himself, and the government simply has no obligation to hunt down and produce information in the hands of a third party. Although that is enough for the government to prevail, and that is what Judge Holdeman relied on in denying the Brady motion in the district court, what's most troubling about it is that before filing the motion, counsel for defendant in the trial court didn't even... there's no hint that he even looked at the tapes. And so there's no allegation made, and there's never any allegation whatsoever until right now that these tapes are in any way favorable to the defendant, let alone material to his defense, which is the standard under Brady. And the government didn't have the tapes before trial either, so the government did not know one way or the other whether the tapes were favorable. And so, as the court has pointed out, we did provide notice. However, that notice was not required because there was no indication whatsoever before trial whether these tapes were favorable. But the defendant did receive notice. Judge Holdeman denied the Brady motion without an evidentiary hearing, and this court should give the defendant's argument similarly short shrift here. And in sum, the government respectfully requests that this court affirm the defendant's conviction.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wilson. Mr. Montemora. Thank you.
Your Honor, just briefly, if I might, just to make conversation with regard to the two elements that I found kind of a problem with me. First of all, the discussion of all of this material with Prudential and saying that we submitted or my client submitted these false allegations to Prudential, it's the basis of this entire argument. Number one, Prudential knew or should have known, and the government should have known, based on these tapes, who it was that was in fact making these telephone calls. This investigation didn't start the day before the trial. There was an FBI agent that was involved in this case for months and months and months that should have developed this information and should have been made available to my client. Secondly, there was, in fact, this argument that he falsified the fact that he was injured is belied by the fact that the insurance company sent this man to four different doctors who made evaluations of his inability to carry on business on a day-to-day basis and that he was, in fact, disabled. And lastly, the government has some duty. I still believe that the government has some duty at some point prior to the trial of this particular cause, other than to write a letter to the defense lawyer and say, look, we know that there are some tapes here. You might want to listen to them to adequately advise this defendant that there might be evidence for his advantage. I'd ask Your Honors to consider this, that in fact what we're trying to do here is get a fair trial and not to try and just pick those particular little portions up that are problematic. And thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Montemoro, and thank you, Mr. Wilson, and the case will be taken under advisement.